Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson. You can reach her at 631-862-1402. Tonight's guest is Dr. Betty Kovach, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. Good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran, and I'd like to also let our listeners know we have a studio guest today, and it's a good friend of ours and a member of the foundation from the beginning, and she's visiting with us here in the studio today from Texas, and her name is Sylvia. So welcome, Sylvia.
Thank you. I'm enjoying being here.
And feel free to jump in whenever you'd like. You know, I just finished reading a book. The author's name is Guy Lyon Playfair, and he's a well-respected researcher. He's been doing psi research for decades, and he wrote a book called Twin Telepathy. Wrote it a while ago and just released an updated version of it. Really fascinating. You know, we talk about telepathy and that. But, you know, telepathy, people theorize, is based upon bonds, and the stronger the bond, the stronger the communication. And who has better bonds than twins? And, of course, the ones that have the biggest bonds or the strongest bonds are identical twins, and it even goes further from there about how the egg was split and so forth. But it's fascinating reading some of these accounts with identical twins and how one twin would suffer an injury, and that same injury would manifest in the other twin, you know, even though the other twin wasn't involved in any kind of an accident. So I don't know if you've ever come across, you know, twins, but more often than not, the twins will say that they can communicate telepathically. Have you ever, you have any friends growing up that were twins?
I have friends growing up that not identical twins.
Yeah.
I had friends who were brother and sister twins.
Right.
I think that was mostly all the twins when I was growing up. I don't think they were same-sex twins.
Yeah, I mean,
I had a teacher. I had a teacher whose brother was also a teacher, and they were twins when I was in high school.
Right.
Couldn't tell them apart, but
I know I was talking with one of our foundation members the other day, and who lost a child, and that child had a twin, and his sister now communicates with her twin on the other side on a regular basis, and I think that that bond certainly continues, you know, on the other side, so that's real interesting, too.
Didn't they just do a thing on twins where they featured the two tennis star twins who play doubles?
Right.
And in the double matches, they said that they were able to know who should be hitting the ball, who should move forward, who should move back.
Anticipate that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, some of that you could argue is just, you know, just based on
good tennis.
Years of playing together. which is, you know, common argument against telepathy with twins, is it's just something that that's like a learned behavior.
Right, but
clearly
didn't they also follow twins who had been separated at birth?
Yeah, and the amazing coincidence is, like, they married girls with the same name. Like, you know, they get the same jobs. They name their kids the same thing. They go to this. They have the same preferences. with foods and tastes, and they wear the same clothing, you know, and they're separated at birth, and they meet up 40 years later or 50 years later. So it is quite compelling. You know, we had a one of our afterlife discussion groups last night, and inevitably we always get, you know, some new people in the group, and most of the people are usually bereaved, or not all the time. And I'm always interested, sometimes I think we make a mistake by thinking that just because somebody is bereaved that they're anxious to go to a medium, because that subject came up. And some people expressed that, well, they really didn't have any interest in going to a medium. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. And there are some fears associated with it. And some of the fear may be based upon their religious inclination, or it may be based upon their education or their cultural influences. But I think a lot of it also has to do with the fear of what happens if my loved one doesn't come through.
And that's the biggest fear.
Yeah, and then I'm even more crushed than I was before. Of course, we've seen it both ways, where people can change their lives by finding, you know, having real strong communication, information that nobody else could have known that's communicated. So, I mean, are you as bothered as me sometimes when we go to these? I mean, would you recommend that somebody go to a group session with a medium the first time that they go to a medium?
No. In fact, when they call the office to book something that we have that is not a one-on-one, I always discourage them, particularly if they have not yet been to a medium and they're bereaved, particularly if they're in very deep grief. The last thing you want to do is to have these people walk into a group setting. Because the reality is, even in a one-to-one reading, you can't guarantee that that particular entity is going to come through.
Right.
So now you put them in a group setting where the medium may not even come to them.
Right.
So you would walk out of that situation worse than when you walked in. When you walk in, at least you have hope. You walk out, you're crushed.
Right. And on the other hand, I've been, you know, witnessing some of these small groups, and we've seen, you know, parents who for the first time have communication, and for the first time a smile comes to their face, you know, in maybe a year or two, you know. So, and that's tremendously rewarding. But then again, but there's so many things, if you say, that's involved. The medium could have an off night, you know. Maybe the spirit's not ready to communicate, or
the spirit doesn't like that medium.
Doesn't like that medium. Doesn't like other people in the group.
Or the entity was a very private person. I'm not coming out in a group. I'm only going to come out in a one-on-one reading.
Right.
Which we also have seen happen.
Yeah. Remember, we were also talking about the time that we did an afterlife survey, and we posted it on the website and the newsletter, and we got back, you know, like over 1,000, you know, responses. And one of the questions in the survey was, would you rather communicate with your deceased loved one directly or through a medium? And I, when we made up the question, I assumed that the overwhelming response was going to be directly. You know, I figured it would be 95%. Well, when the responses came back, it was 35% of the people said that they'd rather get information communicated through a medium, which took me by surprise. And then we started to think about it, you know, what would be the reason for that? And what we figured was that if it came through themselves directly, they might question it. You know, am I making this up? Is it a figment of my imagination? Is it wishful thinking? Whereas if a third party did it, you know, it would be more evidential. You agree with that?
I agree with the observation. On a personal basis, yeah. I would rather get the communication directly myself. How about you, Sylvia?
Directly myself, but like Bob said, when I had instances where my daughter communicated with me, I kept thinking, you're probably making this up because you want it so bad.
Huh? Right. Right. But then again, I mean, I always felt, I still do, that personal experience trumps everything, you know. So I would I'm more convinced, get to that knowing state if I had a personal experience than if I had a third party. So if the information is that compelling, I'm sure my loved one would rather, communicate with me directly than through somebody else. So there's certainly an argument that could be made both ways. Also, some people are fearful of the process itself.
I think if people were more educated about it and people were more aware of just how many people out there have had direct communication, I think they'd side with the direct communication, because then you're not questioning it anymore. I'm not the only one, you know, so it has to be real.
Well, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a wonderful guest, Dr. Betty Kovach, who wrote a book called The Miracle of Death. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Betty Kovach. Our sponsor is Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson and can be reached via phone at 631-862-1402. Bob?
And we're very happy to have a friend of the foundation and the show, a return guest, Betty Kovach. Betty received her PhD from the University of California, Irvine. in comparative literature and the theory of symbolic language. She's studied extensively, taught in Europe and the U.S. She's a professor emerita at Pasadena City College. Her expertise is in literature, writing, mythology, and symbolic language, and that's helped her to find meaning in her own personal tragedies and serves as an inspiration for many, as a matter of fact, all those who have suffered the loss of a loved one. Her book is called The Miracle of Death, There is Nothing But Life. She has a new video series of the same name, and you can find out more information and access those videos on the website, which is kamlak.com, and that's spelled kamlak.com. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Nice to have you with us. You know, I mentioned the new series of videos, which are excellent, and I was viewing them, and I know that you talk about different states of consciousness and how some people can become addicted to ordinary consciousness. So when we talk about ordinary consciousness, why don't you tell us what you mean by that, and how does one become addicted to it?
You know, that line, addicted to ordinary consciousness, actually came from the spirit world in a vision that I had. And it was very clear that ordinary consciousness is the consciousness of the rational mind and of everyday life, which is a wonderful consciousness, but of course it's very limited. But at the particular time that I had this experience, I really wanted to break through and experience spirit. I wanted to go beyond the consciousness that I had in everyday life. But during the time that I was in the experience, I kept negating or reducing the value of whatever I was experiencing, which is very typical of the rational mind. But then at a given point, and I also was thinking about addiction and how so many of our young people go through addiction. Some come out of it, some don't, with substances, actually with drugs. Or, of course, we all have probably experienced addiction to some type of thing in our lives. But when I was worried about that, thinking about that, the voice said, "You are the biggest addict. You are addicted to ordinary consciousness. And this is the mother of all addictions." That was so powerful because I realized in this visionary state exactly what was meant. And that is that in spite of the fact that I was longing for and looking for and doing everything to break through that veil into a larger, more extended consciousness than I needed for daily life, I couldn't believe that it was possible. Or perhaps I couldn't really believe that it existed as much as I wanted it.
Right.
And so I've often thought about that. How do we become addicted? I think our culture, we're born into a culture that is addicted to ordinary consciousness. And, you know, if we just look around us, I mean, people talk about the rational mind or being rational or whatever. And for centuries, we've devalued and denigrated dreams, which we all have access to. We might not have visions, but we do all have dreams, but that they have been so denigrated in our lives in this culture that we haven't really paid attention. And it's like any relationship, we need to really tend to the dreams, to that dreamer within us, and listen to what he or she has to say, and try to understand and to feel and experience what is coming through to us. But so I would just say it is the culture. That's how we become addicted. We're trained in the universe, in schools,
right,
to be addicted to just that and honor only that.
So the problem comes in when we're trying to break the addiction and we're trying to recognize these subtle worlds, you know, where we're eternal. And, I mean, as you say, we've become conditioned that when people talk about the subtle world, it's just purely a figment of our imagination, you know, we're labeled. And so what are some of the things that we can do to break these addictions?
Well, that was kind of something that I was always trying to do, although I didn't think of it in terms of an addiction. The funny thing was is that not long before I had that vision, in fact, just probably the day before, I was thinking, how could anyone be addicted to something and continue doing it when they know that it's harmful? And, and of course, I was missing the point that when we're in denial about those things, we don't really know sometimes if that's what's going on within us, or we keep the denial going because we don't want to know. But I think that the one thing that I could do in my culture was to keep record of my dreams. And I'm very grateful for Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist's work, because he took dreams as a living presence and a consciousness that was coming from another dimension, whether it was the unconscious or another dimension, however we want to think about it, but it was real. He took these dreams so seriously. And I think it took me years to really feel the reality and the seriousness of them. But I did record them, and I did work with them and try to feel them and live with them. And I really did feel that I had a companion within me who was giving me information that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So for me, for years, it was the dream. And then the second thing I did was that I wanted to know, how have other people experienced these extraordinary states? I read about cosmic consciousness. I can remember reading about Richard Maurice Bach's experience. He, in the 1800s, he knew Walt Whitman. In fact, I think he was his doctor. And that was an experience that really inspired me. He talked about having spent the evening with friends, talking about poetry, and he'd been so inspired. And in the coach going home, he was just in a deep meditative state, just as a result of the evening. And when he looked ahead, he thought the city was on fire. And then he realized that it was the light was coming from within the coach, within him. It was a presence. And he was the one who labeled this experience cosmic consciousness, because he said he was just totally enveloped in a love that he had never experienced before, and a joy and an understanding that we will all experience this joy and this love. And that he said, and of course I knew I didn't need to fear death, because that I didn't have to ask the question. He said, I knew this was infinite and eternal. So I think that studying about people who had experiences outside of ordinary consciousness helped me a lot. So the dreams and studying about these experiences, but I also then went to school and I studied literature, because I thought, well, literature will involve history and psychology and all so many other fields that will help me. But always my goal was to understand, how do I get out of this state of consciousness into one that's more extended? Mm. And the study also had to do with, how could it be that if this is possible, we could do things like we did in World War II? So that became the huge question for me. So studying about other states and then just studying about the world, but there was a danger in that, because that activated my left brain, rational consciousness, and I often said it's sort of like I climbed up on a sign, the sign to other dimensions of consciousness that I couldn't get down, because the very study itself had addicted me, because I was being trained in the Western world. Yeah. I didn't live in a world where there was such honor and devotion to life and to nature and to love, and that was nurtured. I didn't have that. So I think those are the things that help as well.
Yeah. Many people, you know, look up to you when they hear about, you know, the personal losses that you have suffered. Is for those who don't know, Betty lost her only son and her husband and her mother, you know, all within a 2-year period in car accidents. And do you sometimes think that all you were on this path, that all of these experiences and all of this journaling you were doing and all of the research was somehow preparing you for what was to come?
Well, I do. And we don't know the larger picture so often. And that's one of the great joys in a visionary state is that it will almost always give us a larger dimension of our reality and what we are about. It's so easy for us to reduce ourselves to such a limited form. But I did come to realize that not only was I working on this project and I wasn't entirely aware of it, but I realized much later that Pishti, my son, and Ishvan, my husband, were also working on that. And when Pishti crossed over, that was a major concern about the work that we were doing together. And it was just such an amazement to me that I had such a limited view, because I kind of thought that I was the only one working on the project. Right. I mean, I knew my son was very interested in those things, but
yeah,
I didn't know
that. Do you think that that people can come to this knowledge, you know, of having this visionary consciousness from reading and from research, or does it take a personal experience to really get you to that, you know, to turn hope, you know, into a true knowing?
Well, I think that first of all, there is a danger, of course, in the research, because it can lead you so much into rational consciousness that you have not nourished the right brain, the symbolic mythic function, so that it can lie dormant and not be able to function. But and I do think that reading about them, I used to, when I taught mythology and symbolic language in college, the students and I, both, all of us felt that helped us. We were open to other possibilities and other dimensions, because we saw in the myths and the fairy tales of peoples all over the world that they were experiencing something that was other than what our culture honored. So that helped us. But I think that for myself, ultimately, the experiences were what transformed me. I remember a shaman when I was in South America, and he said, I can see that you were going to be having the kinds of experiences that you've been teaching about. And I sort of thought at that time, well, he must have found out from somebody, you know, obviously, that I'm teaching, and that was just a fine thing for him to say. That's how negative I was about things.
Right.
But I did start experiencing similar things, like the mystery school experience at Eleusis. And it was so beyond what I had studied that at first I didn't even know that's what I was experiencing. Only later I thought, oh, my God, that's what that was. It was so different. And I think that it's the feeling and the emotion, the knowledge, the wisdom that comes with that kind of experience that transforms us. Mm. But the others keep us open for that possibility.
When, you know, you had so many of these experiences, and as you mentioned, your other family members also had experiences. Did you have any fears? I mean, you were in the you had an academic position as a professor. When you started talking and writing about these experiences, were you afraid that your peers would not relate, and that you'd you'd say, well, other people would say, well, these things, perhaps they happen, but they could never happen to me, why don't they happen to me? I mean, do you sometimes, when you're relating about these experiences, wonder what other people are thinking?
Well, you know, after I finished my PhD and I went to Peru and started really committing myself to trying to break through this veil, there were a few people I talked with, and they were open, and so I talked with them. Now, everyone in the English department knew that I taught symbolic language and myth and fairy tale, and they would often send their students because it was a good preparation for working with symbolic language, and that helped them in literature. And I had their respect, and I respected them. We had a good feeling. And just with these few people, though, especially two, I talked with about what was going on in Peru and the extraordinary experiences I started having when I returned. And that's when I really began to think, I'm being prepared for something, because this is really unusual.
Yeah.
But so I shared it with them. But then when Pishti died, and Ishvan and I started having really powerful experiences, it was so huge for us both. And I trusted that I could talk with these two people. I was wrong. I was totally wrong. one time, one person just started walking backwards, and just it was just amazing. And he and I had been very close. We'd talked together, met together, and then the woman, the other person, she would have, after the first conversation, she absolutely cut off, and we never talked again on the phone. She'd call me often, and because we'd been politically involved in the 60s and 70s, 80s as well, and so we talked off on the phone, and she never did again. And I see her occasionally now, and we're polite with each other, and I found out that she went to the other person, and they both started reading hard science. And I think they couldn't dismiss me entirely, but they didn't know what to do with it. Right. And I talked with the man later, and he said, it scares me. It just scares me. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. Well,
so, yeah, that was the case.
Well, you got to experience what a lot of the modern-day scientists and researchers go through, where they sort of get ostracized by their peers.
Yeah.
Just for presenting their data.
In the scientist case, I mean, there they have the data, and people don't want to look at it.
Right.
Or if they do, they want to make something else of it. And that's what always interests me with atheists. People, I know some at the university who were atheists, and some of them have looked at this scientific information, or they have read near-death experiences. I mean, something is going on there in the science and in these experiences. And when I've talked to them, they suggest that it certainly does look as though something's going on, but they do not change. They go right back to their old positions.
Right.
And I think it isn't information that causes the change. I think it's the experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, as I read, you know, more and more of your stuff and watch the videos, I know that... the information that you have had communicated by both your son and your husband through dreams and visions has been very deep wisdom, not superficial things. And I'm reminded of, you know, going back to the physical mediums, 100 years ago, where certain spirit entities would give volumes sometimes and channel material. And there's a similarity to some of the things that were communicated to you. And I wonder why sometimes I think that maybe some people or those in spirit have maybe given up trying to get the message through. I mean, because you just don't see a lot of wisdom being communicated today.
You know, one of the things that I experienced with PhD and PhD is and Ishwan, while he was alive, was experiencing that with PhD too, is this attempt to communicate to us that, to show us, for instance, the Earth and how polluted it was around it. And he said, you know, and even Jenny, his girlfriend, who was 19, had that experience. He took her way out away from the Earth and had her look at it. And he said, this is not just material, physical pollution. This is the pollution of our belief system, and it makes it very, very difficult to get through. And it's our heritage for us to be able to communicate with other dimensions. I mean, scientists, the new science tells us that we can be in communication, or the whole universe is in communication with every other aspect of itself. If that's true, then we can be in communication with those who have passed into the other world and receive this wisdom. But the belief system, it pollutes it so much, and so that it's hard to get through. And I got the feeling that they're trying. And then one time Ishwan felt PhD come to him, and he said, Dad, come with me. And then they were walking around the Earth, and he saw this just thick, almost like a rock-like substance over the Earth, and PhD said, only love will dissolve this pollution.
Hmm.
And that touched me so deeply, that we really probably don't have to know a lot of things about the civilization or our world. I mean, it's wonderful to know it. But the most important thing is to love, that can heal more than anything else. And I just was so touched when I saw, when I heard Istvan's vision. But Istvan also saw how people are loving, of course. I mean, think of the grief that's experienced throughout the world. And we can only grieve because we love. And Istvan saw this light of love, you know, just being transmitted all over the world, and that it would, and that it was dissolving this terrible pollution of a belief system in which there's no meaning and no purpose to our lives. We've lived in the worst kind of belief system imaginable. We've been born into it. It is polluting. It's polluting to the heart and the whole planet.
Well, we're going to be going to a break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about one of your video series where you entitled it, Are You Playing With Half a Deck? And that sort of plays into it. We are talking with Dr. Betty Kovach. She is the author of The Miracle of Death, There Is Nothing But Life, and also the new video series, The Miracle of Death video series. Her website is Kamla, KAMLAK.com. We're going to go to a break. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll be talking more about the subtle world with Dr. Betty Kovach.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present. Available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com. That's KAMLAK.com for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Betty Kovach. This show is sponsored by Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Carson, and she can be reached by phone at 631-862-1402. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. We're here at Forever Family Foundation. We are sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we will receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 900 online stores like QuickBooks, QVC, Radio Shack, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our dessert and discarnates evenings have been totally sold out until January of 2013. So if you're interested in those, please watch the Forever Family Foundation website on the events page for the next listing and the buy button so you can reserve your seats. How to Listen When Your Children Speak, an afternoon workshop for parents who have lost children, is from 2 to 6 p.m. in Bethel, Connecticut, with certified medium Angelina Diana, opening to bring through only 10 children in spirit. The afternoon will include evidence of an afterlife from a parent's perspective, and a refreshment break with conversations from other parents who have walked in those same shoes. There are only 4 spots left at this event. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona, at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel, with free shuttle service to and from the airport, as well as to local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive, interactive weekend. Make your arrangements and reservations now as the hotel block is filling up. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th, featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo, and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of esteemed scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend also features certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Martin, who will be joining our panel of expert presenters, Dr. Evan Alexander III, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Beischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. And 12-12-12. Don't miss being in the right place on the most spiritual date of the year. 12-12-12 will be a medium marathon featuring an evening of 4 extraordinary mediums, Bobby Allison, Kim Russo, Suri Bernstein, and Laura Lynn Jackson. Seats may be reserved via the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org on the events page. And that's it. Back to you, Bob.
Well, I hope you're still with us, Betty.
Yes, yes. That sounds like so much So much is going on. It's interesting.
I know. And we are talking with Dr. Betty Kovach, the author of The Miracle of Death, There Is Nothing But Life, whose website is comlock.com. Betty, before the break, I mentioned one of the videos in your series is entitled, Are You Playing With Half a Deck? So I know that you were pointing out the way I assume that we tend to rely on our rational minds and discount our intuitive minds. Do you want to elaborate a little bit about that?
Yes, first of all, I have to say that Kim gave it that title. She said, do you think that's crazy? I said, no, I think it's really great.
Well, kudos to Kim. That's a good title.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's true. You know, we do play with half a deck and think that we're the most brilliant civilization that ever existed. We have great praise for ourselves. I think of the Enlightenment philosophers who felt that, you know, the life of the mind only began with consciousness, the rational mind, and they would discard everything that came before in the more ancient, symbolic, mythic, feeling, intuitive mind. So we have, as I had said earlier, pretty much denigrated that. I think to the degree that we don't even realize it, and we don't even, it's hard for us to know that we're missing anything. Because we'd have to have the experience of that visionary, dream, intuitive, deep-feeling world on a daily basis, you know, and integrating it into our rational minds. And then, of course, also allowing the heart. I mean, now, especially with heart math and so much other work that's being done, we know that the heart is a brain component. And I met a person who was doing research several years ago who talked about alexithymia. And I said, well, what in the world is that? And he said, this is a problem of our culture that some people, that they cannot feel. And so there can be no communication from the heart, from those hormones, you might say, and then also from the signals. But it simply is cut off. It cannot get to the brain. And they cannot deal with symbols or myths. And it's a serious problem because we've so denigrated it for so long. So if we could start having the experience and training our children from an early age of how to use more of the brain components and to work with symbols and the feeling-laden content of symbols and so on, then I think that we could begin to play with a full deck.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe our ancestors in ancient times were dominated more by their intuitive side than their rational side?
Yes, it seems so from the history that we have, that, well, you know, it was during the time of Parmenides and later Plato that certainly Plato felt that we had differentiated reason from, and he feared the myth and symbol eventually, which was a terrible burden for Western civilization because that's been the mark of our culture. Mm. But before then, I think, yes, there was more the use of the symbolic, mythic mind. And, of course, the rational mind is a wonderful mind because it can differentiate a certain kind of logic from a symbolic logic. And that's important to know. Jean-Baptiste Vico, who's one of the first great theorists about the symbol, understood that. That was in the 1700s. Unfortunately, it was at the same time of the Enlightenment philosophers, and everybody went crazy over them and left him behind until a later time. But he saw it this way. There is the symbolic mythic mind, which is ancient, and it has a poetic logic. Otherwise, rational logic could never have emerged out of it. But what we have then is the symbolic mythic mind and the logical rational conceptual mind. And they cannot be reduced to each other. Each is a fully developed form of consciousness. And what they need to do is learn how to relate to each other and create a harmony between them. As he said, the idea cannot be reduced to the symbol, and the symbol cannot be reduced to the idea. We need both sides of the brain. And so, yes, we did develop a high degree of differentiation in the rational mind, but unfortunately we threw out what we had been able to use prior to that.
You talk a great deal about the duality of birth and death, and so many of us are think of the two as totally separate. Your experience and your knowledge says otherwise, that they're anything but. They're actually linked and continuous. So can you talk a little bit about the duality?
Yes, we've been taught to think in terms of dualities, that of two things that are separated. And God knows that I grew up fearing death so much, because the women in my mother's family had all died young, and I was so afraid that I would lose her at an early age, as she had her mother. And I couldn't even bear to hear the word dream, because she had had a dream that her mother died, and she died in very much the same way I dream my mother died, and she did not die at that time. But I was scared to death of that kind of experience, because for me, death was the end. It was totally separate from birth. I knew nothing. I was a child. I just had heard all of these stories, and I knew that if I lost my mother, that I would have lost my soul. I couldn't have imagined living without her at that age. But as I grew, I kept trying to find out more about it. But for me, it was a duality for most of my life. In fact, I really knew only after my son Pishti died, when I really was able to experience his continuation and the joy of the other dimension. Then I knew that it is a polarity. I mean, we're born into physical time and space, and then we leave this shell and step back in. We are born back into the subtle world. So it's a yin-yang circle. While we're alive, we're always moving toward death, which is another kind of birth. And from the subtle world, we can move back into the physical world. I think that the duality is really tragic, in that it has made us think in terms of the physical world of matter and spirit as being so different. And among indigenous people, that wasn't and isn't the case. They have no surprise at having experiences with the subtle world, because they see it constantly blending and flowing together. And I love how Fred Alan Wolf, I just love his comment. He's a physicist, and he says that matter is how spirit appears in the physical universe.
Mm.
That it's all one. It's not this and that separate right through the middle. But that's been our thinking. And, of course, we thought there was nothing but matter, so anything else was superfluous anyway. But now physicists, as you so well know, are saying that, no, the matter is how spirit appears in the physical universe, but that this flows, it's flowing all the time. And I think, you had reminded me once of a vision that, or I guess it was a vision Pishti had, and I remember making coffee that morning, and he was telling me about it, and it was a world that was, it was a spirit world, but it was this world. And he said, you know, Mom, I think that what we are doing here is trying to create that world here in time and space, that we're really working as creators to bring these two together so that it flows again.
So these indigenous, you know, tribes that or people that recognize the continuum, they live their lives differently because their view of death differs, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know that you believe that our view of death impacts every aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. It certainly has in your case, no?
Well, and you know, it did before, when I thought that was just the end. I had such a fear of either Pishti dying or Pishta dying and my mother dying earlier. It was a horrible thing to live with. But I had to live with it until I could experience something different, because I could not believe it. I couldn't believe the thing.
Well, I know that we're coming to a close, but, I mean, for all those that, I mean, let's face it, I mean, a lot of the people that we deal with are bereaved, and they come and they ask two questions. They want to know, does my loved one still exist, and are they okay? But when they read your book and they view your video series, what are they going to get out of that in terms of those two questions?
Well, of course, those are the two questions.
Right.
And my feeling is, from my experience, that of course they're still, they are alive, as Pishti had said, there is nothing but life. Everything is alive. Right. And death is just a passing from one form into another. And I love how one shaman said, you know, we should learn to trust the universe. The universe, the core of the universe is love. And of course they're okay. Of course those we love are okay.
And that is, and that's certainly the message, the takeaway message from the book. So I encourage everybody, if you haven't read it already, the book is called The Miracle of Death. As Betty said, there is nothing but life. There's also the video series. Visit Kamla, KAMLAK.com. Betty, thank you so much for being with us. It's a pleasure, as always, and I'm sure everybody appreciates your wisdom.
Oh, thank you so much, and Kim and I hope to see you in November. If there are no trials, we'll be there.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Stanley Mulan, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Doreen Malloy, Barbara Petillo, Pat Longo, Vincent Longo, David Haith, Rita Springer, CJ, Lynn LeClaire, Joanne Gerber, Eileen LaFada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, Nancy Scheel, Isabel Ginsberg, Barbara Russell, and Diane Archangel. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. That was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time to say, our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it. Good night, everyone.